Let's just say it was a matter of trust.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Of the Crystal Castle. This is Spirit, my beloved steed. Fabulous secrets were revealed to me the day I held aloft my sword and said, "For the honor of Grayskull!" A few others share this secret. Among them are Lightfoot, Madame Raz, and Cowl. Together, we and my friends of the Great Rebellion strive to free Etheria from the evil forces of Horda!
Hello, this is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 58th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise is TFG and Mike. Hello. At least let us know what you're drinking there.
It's not alcohol, sadly.
Hopefully some type of carbonated beverage.
Yes, of course. Us be drunk on a podcast? No.
I was just trying to make sure, you know... I don't know. Oh, I was trying to get what you drink as a soda beverage choice.
Just for the taste of it. Diet Coke. I mean, come on.
I knew there was something wrong with you. I can't drink anything diet. It makes my stomach turn.
I can't drink anything regular.
I can't anymore as far as Pepsi and Coke. I don't drink either one. I drink all Dr. Pepper or Pibb. That's all I drink. And I'm addicted.
For some odd reason... Whether it's, it doesn't matter if it's diet or regular, I can't drink AMW root beer anymore. It gives me the worst migraines I've ever had.
Hmm. Well, for more pop discussion,
head on over to Geekcast Radio for the nine top nines of the 90s. Wait, that's
something different. Are you ready for more Myths of Etheria, sir?
Yes. All right. Of course.
In this episode of Myths of Etheria, we'll be giving you our thoughts on episode 34, Troll's Dream, episode 35, Gateway to Trouble, and episode 36, The Unicorn King. So we hope you're ready, because it's time to go back to Etheria.
Why they got ponies in this show now?
At least they're not little.
At least they're not mine.
Hello. Gotham Corner Store? Yes, we seem to be down to our last Diet Coke. A gentleman is on his way to pick some up. Just look for a black car. No, this black car will be rather difficult to miss. And by the way, the gentleman is usually in quite a rush.
Just for the taste of it, Diet Coke!
Where's Adora this fine morning?
She went into Thamor to get some information from one of our spies. She'll be back soon.
These ogleberries will make a great breakfast.
Yeah, right, Sprague.
Wait!
What is it?
Look over there.
It's a monster.
Worse than a monster. It's a troll, and he's spying on our camp.
What are we gonna do, Sprague?
Drop that stuff and let's get him!
Yeah, right!
Gotcha!
Ow!
What in the world?
Flying Twiggets. How unusual.
Start today with episode 34, Troll's Dream, with an air date of Wednesday, October 23rd, 1985, written by Larry DiTilio. She-Ra needs to protect the power of Spider from Shadow Weaver and Scorpia. That's all we get for a plot synopsis. We have Shadow Weaver and Scorpia as the Horde members. We have She-Ra, Swiftwind, Bo, Kyle, Sprague, and Sprocker. And then we also see Grox, a returning appearance from King Ago, Duke Dreer, and some random villagers. So what did you think about the setup for Troll's Dream and this whole power of Spider thing that they're after?
At first, I thought they were going to make a spy door reference, but they already used him. Like, no, so, like, I wasn't expecting, like, a crystal spider. I just wasn't expecting a crystal Charlotte's Web here. The more and more, because I actually had to, I had to watch this twice, because what I've been doing lately is I've been recording the entire session, the entire episode for audio, and just cutting out what I want versus just trying to grab into it. So I essentially watch, that's how I do the Phineas and Ferb stuff as well, is I watch the whole episode just recording it, and then I go back and I watch it and take my notes. And since I saw this episode, these three episodes today twice each, I'm like, Grox, he kind of reminds me of, what's his name, one of the ogres from Gummy Bears.
Oh,
the,
yeah, I can see that.
The head ogre of Duke, whatever the hell is done leaving or done whatever. I don't know.
You're failing at your Disney afternoon knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been watching Animaniacs a lot, and all I can think of is the Duke of Dunlicus.
That's not it.
I know, right? I like this one. I thought it was interesting. I think it's interesting going back to seeing the troll people. I think and we'll talk about this a little bit later probably, but I think the overall message was a little heavy-handed, though. It's a good message, obviously. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it was kind of like, here, kids, open up. Take this message right down your throats.
I agree. I like the idea of seeing King Ago again. I like the fact that they actually used a character that they had used before, not just some other random trolls. They have this troll named Grox, which I believe might be the same troll that we saw previously, but he wasn't named in the first episode. Maybe not. My only thing with the plot here is there seems... I don't know if I 100% buy the connection between everything. We got the troll people, we got Shadow Weaver and Scorpia, and then we have this weird, like, power of spider thing. And that was just... I don't know. It was odd to me how that kind of played into everything. I would have liked to see something more related to the trolls and why this all involves everybody that's involved in this episode, but I don't have a problem with the idea of going back into the troll world and seeing more of them.
I mean, I thought it was all linked because of his dream, because he basically predicted the few. I mean,
I get that, but it would have been different if it was something like part of the troll culture, like the spider was just like, I don't know, maybe I just didn't like spiders. Maybe I don't like spiders. Okay. I'm going to say that's my issue. That was my only problem with it. It wasn't the fact that we have Horde, you know, members interfering with troll stuff or all that kind of different things. It's just this weird crystal spider, and the power of the spider threw me off. So, but I, like I said, I don't have any problems going back into the troll world and seeing more of them. They're fine characters. So, yep. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and get back to what our favorite and least favorite moments of the first episode today are.
I'll see that She-Ra gets the message.
Where is he? Where is that big creep?
Over there, but...
Let me at him!
Just a minute, Sprague. This troll is our friend. We must offer him every hospitality.
Friend? No troll is a friend of mine. I'll fix him.
Perhaps you'd better go for now, Grox.
I'll rearrange his ugly face.
Yes, I will go. This hospitality of yours is not to my liking.
Run, you coward! Guess I told him.
Sprague, I've never been so ashamed of you in all my life.
Huh?
Now hold on, Adora. It was that sneaky troll who started all the trouble.
That's right.
Did any of you ask him why he was here?
Well, to tell you the truth.
Well, you can't ask a troll anything. They're too stupid.
So you just attacked him without any reason.
He's a troll. That's reason enough.
Good point, Sprague.
Right. We all know how trolls are.
I suppose you've all forgotten that it was Argo, the king of the trolls, who helped She-Ra find the Crystal Castle and save Bright Moon from the Horde.
Well, I still don't trust them.
All right. I've heard enough. I'm going to get She-Ra and send her back here. And the three of you are going to see King Argo with her.
Us?
I'm much too busy. Ha! I'm not going with her to see any ugly old trolls.
Listen, all of you. I gave an order, and if you don't like it, you can leave the rebellion once and for all. And that's my last word on the matter.
We find ourselves in the Whispering Woods for the first time today, Mike, and I'd like to know what things you see there.
I do like seeing Sprague again. I don't know how long it's been since we've actually seen a episode solely focused on him as one of the Twiggets. I just love Scheimer's voice for him. Lou Scheimer's Sprague is just awesome. Let's see. What else? I do like the many different action scenes we get in this. But there really wasn't any other than, I can't even think of anything. There wasn't really anything stand out for me that, oh my God, this is one of the best moments of the series.
I can see that.
This is them going back and visiting the trolls, which I like. I think that's good. Bringing those characters back in. And as I said on both sides, you know, the whole message thing, it's a good message. It's just, it's like they took a sledgehammer to it.
Yeah, I can see that in a way. Things that I liked, like I said, I like going back into the troll world and seeing a little bit more of that. I also liked the underlying racism, I guess, that they were somewhat dealing with in this whole episode, with everybody not trusting trolls and not wanting to be associated with trolls. I think it's hard to not escape some form of stereotyping, racism storyline in there. I think that's an important one for kids. I also like the idea that some people in this land are Horde supporters. That it's not just the Horde and then everybody else is these weak little things that the Horde is attacking and pillaging and whatever, that there are actually some people out there that are on their side. I thought mm-hmm. that was kind of a cool element. We haven't seen a lot of that. And Duke Dreer, to me, was a cool-looking and acting and speaking villain. Like, I liked him as a villain. So those were probably my favorite moments. Do you like Duke Dreer?
Yeah, I like him. He's all right. I just wish that these... And it's the same thing I've said the last 4 or 5 years for He-Man. These one-off villains that we probably won't ever see again. I just wish that they would... I don't know.
Have more to him.
I mean, he's a cool villain. He sounds great. He looks great, but essentially, he's inconsequential to the plot. I mean, once they release the spider, it's hey, let's trap the spider in Spider's Canyon. I mean, let's you know, let's go back to the Wild Wild West and make sure there's no Arliss Loveless to combat. Yeah.
They've had a couple cool villains in both He-Man and She-Ra that just nobody ever really did anything with, and never kind of they could have been cool recurring characters, and they just didn't go that route. So,
well, like the trolls have now become a recurring character. The first time we saw the trolls, as we all know, was the Crystal Castle, and it was the whole thing of She-Ra needing to find the Crystal Castle,
right?
And we now see them again. Okay, so there's a little bit more of a storyline with them because of the whole the humans don't like the trolls and vice versa, the whole, you know, the whole hate plague thing and everything else. But it's just one of those things where why do the potential recurring allies get a better storyline than what could have been a potential recurring villain?
Yeah, I agree with you on that one for once. All right, I had to add the for once in because, you know,
yeah,
I don't always agree. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Fright Zone and see what we didn't like about this episode. What about you first?
I actually wrote this down first before I wrote the two Whispering Wood moments. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, there is so much wrong with this episode. Both Bo and the Rebellion's part and the Trolls' part. Like, I get Bo kind of instigated this whole thing. It's his fault for just assuming that the Trolls were going to be evil and whatever else, but... once Adora showed up and started talking to them, when she asks the troll to put the table down, did he seriously? He couldn't just set it down. He had to throw it against the tree and destroy it. Like, he picked it up nice and gentle-like and put it over his head. He couldn't just reverse that and just set it down? Seriously?
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I had. Like I said, it's another one of those episodes where it's very middle of the road. Nothing so awfully bad happens where it, you know, gets my rage up, and nothing so awesomely good happens where it's like, oh my god, this could be one of the best episodes. This, it's just another one of those, hey, this episode, it's here.
Well, no one wants to get your rage up, because we know what happens when that happens. But a couple things for me. Number one, they find themselves in a situation where they need to blast through a wall, and they just conveniently they break through the wall, and then, like, there's really no explanation as to how or what they did, except they add the line, oh, thank god for that blast arrow. That seemed kind of cheap. Like, if you're going to use a blast arrow to get through the wall, why not show that? So I thought that was kind of dumb. I already talked about the spider being kind of lame and not necessarily enjoying the spider very much. But my biggest thing here is towards the end of the episode, they are trying to capture the spider.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Troll King and She-Ra. And they're trying to basically capture this spider. And she has to basically force these big piles of rocks down on either side of the spider. And then the Troll King basically just forms stones around the rest of him using his magic.
Not that I'm trying to defend this, but didn't he just move this? Like, I didn't think those were additional stones. I thought those were the stones that she threw. And he just moved him around.
Well, my point is, regardless, if he had the power to do that, why did she even need to be involved? Why couldn't he have just formed the stones, moved them from wherever they were in the first place? Why did she have to knock them down first for him to move them? Or if he created new ones, why couldn't he have just done that to begin with? So I was just watching that whole thing like, Shira just did this, but seems like that wasn't necessary. So I don't know about that. Yeah. The PSA and the final thought there for the episode, the PSA was all about...
But dreams may come.
In order to dream, you have to be asleep. So go to bed when you're told.
I still... every episode we do, and I have to look at that little imp. And not the good one, not the blue one, the other one. It's like, oh my god, I'd rather have a Scott and T-Bob PSA. Oh god, just low-key.
I don't hate him as much as you do, but my point with this one is you have a lot of themes and messages that you could touch on based on this episode. Like I said, there's stereotyping, there's racism, there's all these kind of things, and instead we're going to go to bed when your parents tell you to.
Yep.
First of all, no kid's going to like that, and no kid's going to listen to that. We will go to bed when we want to go to bed. So I don't know. Not a big fan of the PSA. So
no.
All right, let's take a quick break and be back to see, even if the episode didn't necessarily rise you in fury or in glee, maybe some individual people at least did enough to get some rewards or awards. Let's check it out after the break.
Is everyone all right?
Yeah, we're fine. But we gotta help Grox.
Help Grox? But Sprag, he's just a troll. Why would you want to help a troll?
We know we made a mistake, She-Ra, but maybe we can make it up to Grox by helping him now.
Yeah! I agree.
Now that's what I like to hear. Grox said the bats came from Duke Dreer, so he must have been taken to Dreer's fortress.
We've still got to stop the spider of crystal from rising, and we don't know how much time we have.
We'll just have to take a chance. We can't leave Grox.
Cowl, Sprag, and I can deal with the Duke. Why don't you go on ahead? We'll follow when we've got Grox.
Are you sure?
You bet. We were wrong about him. So it's up to us to save our big buddy.
All right. Let's do it.
All right, our first chance today to hand out some hardware. We all know that Mike likes to hand out quite a bit, so we'll have to see how many he hands out today. But I'm going to beat him to the punch first. Because I have I'm going to empty my whole trophy case, I think, with Horde Bats. And I'm going to give a Horde Bat to practically every member of the Rebellion. That includes Cowl. I know they're the Twiggets, but I accidentally wrote down Spriggets. Cowl, I can never keep them straight. I think they should be called Spriggets because they all start with S, not T. Anyways, Kyle, the Twiggets, Bo, all you racist jerks that are not wanting to associate with the trolls because they're evil. And it wasn't just like, hey, we're scared of these creatures or we're scared of these monsters. It was like,
we outright hate.
Outright hate. And even when confronted with it, still hate. So, and they did nothing. The Grox guy was trying to help out and everything. So you all get a horde bat upside the head for your closed-minded hate. Any horde bats for you?
I can agree with all that. All
right. As far as protection swords, I do have a couple of those to give out as well. Number one, She-Ra Adora, whichever version you want to call, for being the voice of reason, the only member of the rebellion apparently that wasn't going to hate on the trolls. And then Grox for even taking all of that hate and still being the bigger person, and not just literally, and helping them out, trying to save the day. So Grox and She-Ra both get power swords for me, or protection swords. What about you?
I can agree with that, but I just felt like this whole episode just didn't deserve anything for these. Like,
so no trophies for you?
No.
All right. As far as episode rating, I think we're going to be somewhat in agreement with each other, maybe not. Like you said, this episode's nothing to write home about. It's nothing to get pissed off about. It's just kind of there. I think it is, if you had to like move the needle slightly to one direction or the other, I think you do move it somewhat in a positive way. We do get to see the trolls, and I like that, and I liked Duke Dreer and some of that stuff. But it's just barely to the positive, so I'm going to give this one a 3 out of 5. What about you?
Same here, 3 out of 5. There's no moments here for any of... Okay, sure, there's the moment with Grox, which is great, but there's no actual moments here, even though I love the voice of Sprague and everything else. His actions here were just meh. And Bo is just consistently written as an idiot. I mean, he really, really is. He, like I said, there wasn't anything in it. Like, yeah, sure, Bo annoyed me a bit, but he didn't annoy me to the point of, oh my God, I want to just smash a horde bat up against the side of his head. But it's just one of those things where if you're going to have a counterpart to the He-Man series, and we've already been through 4 years of He-Man, so we've already been through all that. But if you're going to have his twin sister and whatever else, and you're going to have it more towards, like, how is this a girl-centric show with this specific episode? Because that was the whole point behind this, was they wanted an action cartoon for girls back then. So it's like, I'm not sure where that comes in with this plot.
Yeah, and that's kind of, well, that kind of speaks to the whole series in a way, because I was expecting a lot more girl-centric plots, a lot more female characters. Even though we do have quite a few female characters, I was expecting even more. And honestly, this is just much more just like regular He-Man episodes that just happen to have a couple of She-Ra instead of He-Man. Like, this isn't necessarily like they did anything different to make this more stories relatable to girls or to bring in different, it doesn't seem that different to me up to this point.
Yeah.
But another question for you, this is written by Larry DiTilio, is something I've noticed, because I've actually gone forward and done a whole lot of script work for us, and you know, got all the scripts basically through season one done. And we're going to get a spoiler, I guess, but we're going to get a healthy dose of episodes by Larry DiTilio, Bob Forward, and J. Michael Straczynski. We have a whole bunch of them coming up written by those three individuals. And when I was making all the scripts, it kind of excited me, because typically they have more positive episodes than negative. Are you a little disappointed with DiTilio on this episode?
Kinda. I mean, he's got... I mean, folks, this is Larry DiTilio. I mean, the man has done a lot of stuff over the years. He's written a lot of very well done
And we cartoons. Rated him very well in our He-Man episodes overall.
Yeah, I mean, like... And it seems to me that, as I've said before, they just see, like, was it last episode we mentioned we're at the halfway point of season one also? Or at the halfway point of season one, and it just seems like they're getting writers that we've never seen before, or that we don't know that much of. They're not even getting writers back from He-Man. They're, you know, bringing in new staff writers, and like, DiTilio was one of the main proponents of Secret of the Sword and, you know, making, you know, the female He-Man or whatever else, because he was on the commentary. He was on the whole thing as far as bringing, you know, the story to life. And it just seems like he, I don't know. I love the guy to death, but.
Not in this episode. We'll have to wait and see if there's some.
Was he having an off week or something?
We'll have to wait and see if there's some better episodes from him coming down the pike. But let's take a quick break. And then speaking of writers, we'll get into episode 35 after the break, which is written by J. Michael Straczynski. So we'll get another dose and see if he lets us down as well or if things pick up from here.
Understand why your brother has to appear all the way out here when he visits from Eternia.
Uh-oh, trouble.
I still don't see anyone. Our spies said that rebels were sighted here, and we're going to search until we find them.
We've got to get rid of those troopers before Adam gets here. And that hollow tree gives me an idea. Come on, Cowl. We'd better move fast.
Hello there, swamp slug.
Don't you call me a swamp slug.
You're right. We mustn't insult the swamp slugs.
All right, that's it. You are now a prisoner of the Horn.
Oh, you'll have to catch me first.
You can't get away from me in here. Hey, stop!
Hey, Rivet Head. Only a coward hides inside a tin can.
That does it. Come here.
Try to catch me.
Hey, I am stuck.
All right, Adora. They're all yours.
Thanks, Cowl. But first,
for the honor of Greyskull.
All right, next up today is episode 35, Gateway to Trouble, air date of Thursday, October 24th, 1985. As we said, written by J. Michael Straczynski. Skeletor plans to use a gate maker to transport the entire royal palace to Etheria and just get rid of it. But when Modulok defects to the Horde, Old Boneface follows him to Etheria and makes an uncomfortable truce with She-Ra and He-Man. So, catch my breath here, we have Hordak, Tongue Lasher, Shadow Weaver, Skeletor, Mantenna, Modulok, and Horde Troopers. We have She-Ra, the Sorceress, He-Man, Battle Cat, Spartina, and Cowl. So, another crossover episode, this time Skeletor initiating the crossover, I guess, and dealing with the fact that he's trying to transport everything to Etheria, ends up having to have a truce with She-Ra and He-Man. We have Modulok, which is, I think, one of the first times we've seen a evil warrior in Etheria. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the setup of this episode?
See, I always thought Modulok was a part of the Horde. I've already spent 3-4 years doing He-Man, I always thought he was like a Horde member, not an evil warrior member for Skeletor. So it was kind of interesting to see that he was an evil warrior. He defected to the Horde, and sadly he is now the Horde cook. Where's the rest of the whole, that's what I want to, like, where's Leech, where's Scorpio, where's, like, don't get me wrong, I love Mantenna, I think he's awesome, but this is just an episode with Hordak.
Oh, we have Tongue Lasher.
But he started off at Skeletor's, and I'm like, wait, he's got a giant Horde bat on him, why is he at Skeletor's? Did he defect from the Horde to Skeletor? I don't know.
What about the whole Skeletor having to work with He-Man and She-Ra?
I like that. I think it's interesting. What I wish this episode would have done has nothing to do with the writing, but just the execution of it is, I wish it would have actually been able to show Skeletor or Hordak doing what they said they were going to do. Like, I wish we could have actually seen the Royal Palace going through a portal, or I wish we could have seen Hordak on Eternia again trying to take over.
Yeah.
I think the way it's structured and the way it's written and everything else, it's couldn't have time for that. But I mean, overall, it's another crossover. It's another fairly good crossover. At least this time they completely stiff one character for another, which is kind of silly. You have Battlecat this time, but no Swiftwind.
Yeah. We finally get to see Battlecat in Etheria, though, so I did.
But yeah.
We continue to have crossovers, which are intriguing in and of themselves, but it seems like we keep switching around which characters actually get to be involved. We've seen Orko, we've seen, the Sorceress, now we see Battlecat, so it's interesting which people we actually get to see. Luckily, we've avoided a couple characters that will go unnamed, but I like the setup. I like the idea of what's going on. I like the... Anytime that Skeletor and Hordak are both involved, it's interesting because you always have... They're not necessarily on the same side, so it's almost like you have a three-prong attack, sort of speak. Like, you have the good characters, and you have Hordak, and then you have Skeletor, and they all have different motives, so it's kind of interesting to see how that plays out, so... I'm a big fan of crossovers, and I like the setup on this one. So it's just going to come down to execution as far as if I rate this one high or not. So let's take a quick break and see how that execution plays out.
Adam, so good to see you again.
Glad we could make it.
So tell me, brother, what's the problem?
Problem? I'm just here to see my sister. You and I don't spend nearly as much time together as we should.
The planet's name is Etheria.
Never heard of it.
I have. Very good, Tongue Lash. Yes, that place has been a thorn in my side for years. With this gate maker, I will be able to open a door to Etheria so big that I can use it to send the entire royal palace through, getting rid of everyone all at the same time.
Why Etheria?
A stupid question, Moduloc. To answer your stupid question, Etheria is run by Hordak. And I dislike him almost as much as I do He-Man. So why not send the royal family to Hordak and let him worry about them for a change?
Yeah, so there.
Move it or lose it, long lips. There, it's ready.
Excellent. Now let's test it. Program the gate maker to open a small gate to Etheria for starters.
Next time, use your hand. That is disgusting.
Now to check out what's on the other side. Is this, by chance, Etheria?
Sure it is! Yow!
It works! My machine works! With this gate maker, I can move whole cities! I can send an army anywhere in the universe! Even Hordak doesn't have anything like this!
Then perhaps Hordak would give me more for this than Skeletor. I've had it with you, Skeletor. I am leaving and taking the Gate Maker, where it and I would be appreciated, to Hordak.
You can't do this to me. I'll get you for this.
Skeletor, look out! The gate will close any second.
Etheria. Now to find Hordak.
Now to find Moduloc and my gate maker. Which way would he have gone?
Skeletor!
What's he doing here?
I don't know, but I think He-Man
and She-Ra
had better find out.
The power of Grayskull.
He-Man. He-Man.
I am the
impressive, isn't it?
All right, let's start off in the Whispering Woods today to talk about this latest in our crossover series, this time Gateway to Trouble. What did you like best about this episode?
Finally, Battle Cat on Etheria.
Yeah, I agree with that one 100%.
Finally. And I know that he was there originally way back when, but he hasn't been there until from Secret of the Sword till now. All right. Poor Mantana. He didn't even do anything that time. He didn't even say anything that would piss Hordak off. He didn't do anything stupid that we just like, wow. And then he climbs back. How the hell did he climb back up that thing? That's what I want to know. If we put our swords together, never cross the swords. Come on now. Can the Ghostbusters teach you people anything?
Yeah, that is for sure. Anything else?
That's about it. No, what about you?
I love that we start off with Skeletor with Tongue Lasher and Modulok. Even though Tongue Lasher, like you said, doesn't make 100% sense, but just seeing Skeletor and, I guess, quote unquote, some evil warriors was interesting. Mm-hmm. I like how Skeletor has to stick his head in the portal. Like, he has to, like, stick his head in to look around and see what's going on. That was hilarious. Cowl even speaks for us on the double transformation and has a line where he says, "Impressive, isn't it?" Yep. I thought that was cool because obviously
it would have been better because this is written by Straczynski, right?
Yeah.
It would have been better if he did a certain Star Wars line. Impressive, most impressive.
Yeah. But I just thought it was impressive. I just thought it was cool that he calls out the double transformation and was like,
every time I see that, it doesn't matter what it is, it doesn't matter how they do it, it's always impressive.
Yeah, I like the idea of Modulok trying to make a deal with Hordak. I think that's an interesting twist of him defecting and whatnot. I thought that was a cool angle, and it kind of adds to that character. He's very much out for his own. We've seen that from the beginning, basically, even if you watch it out of order like we had to. But Modulok's always kind of been that rogue evil warrior that, if possible, will do something to kind of promote himself and to get himself in a good position. He's a little bit like Tarantulas from Beast Wars in a way. He's smart. He knows he can make a lot of stuff, and he tries to play everybody against each other somewhat.
Yeah, that's true, but Tarantulas was much more treacherous.
Yeah. I think Modulok's not quite as smart, but what is a bogwaddler? Is that an insult, apparently? Never heard that word before. So, I like how Skeletor even has a line, too, where he's just going to sit back and wait and see who wins in this battle.
should I interfere with them? No, I think I'll just sit here on the sidelines and see who wins.
Yeah, that's a smart thing. Skeletor's a smart guy. And go ahead.
I cannot do, like, every now and then I can do a semi-okay Skeletor, but it usually ends up into my Don Adams, which is, I missed it by that much. But it's one of those things where a buddy of mine, Adas Baron, since I haven't been able to get you caught up on a lot of the He-Man comic stuff, he and I have been doing the He-Man DC comic stuff that has been released over the last few years, and we're currently going through what they're calling the Eternity War series for He-Man over at DC. And the series has already ended at this point, but he does, like, literally, like, you'd think Alan Oppenheimer was in the room. He does the best Skeletor that, outside of Oppenheimer, he does the best Filmation Skeletor I've ever heard.
I have to get some clips recorded from him. And like you said, the Horde cook. That was just a funny touch. So they didn't know the Horde had a cook, but that'd be a funny job for him in the future. As far as Fright Zone moments for me, did the cables come to life and grab Hordak? Because it was
No, they didn't. What they did was he fired at her and she deflected. But her deflection didn't hit him, and he's like, "Oh, you missed, She-Ra." She's like, "I wasn't aiming for you." I was aiming for the things above you. And so whatever she deflected hit the cables and stuff and then came down and basically tangled him up like jungle vines.
But it seemed like they had a mind of their own at some point as well.
That's not the worst thing in this episode.
And then
episode,
there's something that device is plugged in. What power source is it plugged into on Etheria?
I don't know.
And then the easy cop-out when something gets destroyed, we can't recreate that or can't do anything. It was made of rare minerals.
It was one of a kind.
So
that's not even the worst thing in this entire episode.
I must have missed it. What is?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have anything else written down. What do you got?
Sword to handcuffs. What?
I like that.
Are you okay? Seriously. Like, if it had been the sword turning into two handcuffs that actually went behind his back and actually took his arms, that would have been cool. But the sword turning into a giant handcuff, give me a mother flipping break over
here.
Wow,
we almost got Mike to cuss on the show.
Oh my god! I didn't cuss. I said flipping.
I said we almost got you to cuss.
Yeah, almost. Well, I've done it before.
Uh-huh.
But it's just one of those things where like last episode.
So you're not a fan of giant handcuffs.
Just
regular size handcuffs, okay. Handcuffs, no good.
What I'm saying is, like, supposedly the sort of protection with She-Ra's powers, it's somewhat alive. It somewhat has a mind of its own. Obviously, she has to direct it to certain. Well, I'm saying that, like, sword to lasso, and then she, you know, becomes Wonder Woman, or sword to whatever, you know. But it's just one of those things where her powers have always been slightly different and more than He-Man's, because she obviously has the healing power and all that stuff and everything else. And it just, like, if she would have said, you know, sword to handcuff, and it would have, like, because the problem I have with it is it just goes around him, around Skeletor, and he just stands there. Like, if it would have pinned him to a tree or something like that, I could have.
Well, and honestly, it's not a handcuff if it's going around his body.
That's the point. Like, I want it, but it looks like a giant handcuff is what it
looks
like. Well,
no, that's what she says.
Yeah.
So it's not really doing what a handcuff would do. It's more like a whatever else you would call it. So
I couldn't even get through the PSA on this one, so I don't even know.
It was getting out of trouble is not always easy, so don't get into trouble. So just don't get into trouble, kids. Don't get into trouble. So it was comical, but I mean, I don't think anyone's intentionally necessarily. I mean, some people are, but the majority of kids watching this are not intentionally getting into trouble. They're being kids, and they might get themselves into trouble, but they're not, like, seeking trouble out, maybe?
This is why this kind of lesson is more apt for an Orko-based episode, like we did last time, with him accidentally getting knocked into Etheria from... It was something he did, but it wasn't something that he was trying to get in trouble for. He was doing his job, and then the giant Alice in Wonderland door knocker sneezed him into Etheria. But, like, I could see this kind of storyline of that PSA of kids don't get in trouble. Like, every time an Orko says, oh, Man-at-Arms wanted me to clean my room, you know, that kind of thing. I could see if it was with Orko or if it was with one of the Twiggets, but with this crossover with the main character, I just don't see that PSA fitting this episode.
Not doing a great job of lining them up with the episode, so.
Nuh-uh.
All right, let's take a quick break and see if Mike, he saved all his hardware from last episode. Let's see if he's going to dole it out on this next one.
He-Man and She-Ra against Hordak. I'm just in time. I could help them. I could work with them instead of against them. We could defeat Hordak together. I think I'll wait and see who wins instead.
All right, I know you're chomping at the bit, sir. It's time to hand out either Horde Bats or Protection Swords. What do you have?
She-Ra gets a Horde Bat.
She-Ra gets a Horde Bat.
She-Ra gets a... I'm sorry.
Why is this?
That is the worst thing that she's... like, that's second to the friggin' tennis racket from last week.
The tennis racket's worse.
It is, but that's why I said this is second to worst to the tennis, like, sword to hand. Like I said, if the sword had turned into two, like, a ball and chain, you know what I mean? Like, the two handcuff things, and actually went behind his back, and, like, that I could, but a giant, oh, God, yeah, no, She-Ra, stop turning your sword into stupid shit.
All right, so not a big fan of that moment, for sure. You made that abundantly clear.
Yeah.
Any protection swords for you?
Of course, He-Man, Battle Cat, and Skeletor. Skeletor just gets one automatically because of he's just so funny in the episode.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I can agree with that one. I'm going to give no Horde Bats out, but I will give a Protection Sword to Modulok. I like the scheming aspect of him and the fact that he doesn't answer to anyone. And I just think he adds another element. So, I mean, you already have the idea that Hordak and Skeletor aren't necessarily the best of friends, and now you have one person that is kind of playing them off of each other, so I appreciate that.
No one summons Modulok, and it pleases me to be the first. I swear he's the Megatron of this universe.
Yeah, could be. What about Crystal Castles for this episode?
Even though I didn't like that one moment, it's not so glaring that I still didn't enjoy the episode overall, the crossover aspect and all that. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
All right, 4 out of 5 for you. I'm in agreement that this is a better episode. I actually went all the way up to 4.5. It's not flawless, so I'm not going to give it a 5, but I really enjoyed it. I liked seeing Battle Cat on Etheria. I like seeing some of the evil warriors come over and the defection, so to speak. I like Skeletor's humor. I just thought it was a fun episode overall, and I could deal with more episodes at least like this. Like, if you're just going to... I'd rather at least just have just generic crossover episodes than generic nothing episodes. So,
yeah,
4.5 for me. So, we're going to take a quick break. We'll have to see if we continue to go up or if we go back down as we make our way to the last episode of today, episode 36, coming up next.
See, Mantenna?
Water! Lots of water!
Of course there's water! Floppy eyes, we're in the growling sea! Find something else! I didn't name my new boat the Sea Fright just to go fun sailing with you!
Yes, Great Hordak! I'm looking!
I want to rule the lands and the seas of Etheria!
Oh, yes, Great One! Hordak, an island!
Put it on the screen so that I can see it. Doesn't look like much.
What's that?
A unicorn. That must be Unicorn Island. I always thought it was just a story, but it's real.
Oh, are we going to sink it?
Sink an island? No, you fool! We'll capture it and make it a Horde base, and we'll make slaves of the unicorns.
That sounds good. So how do we do that? What's your plan?
My plan? Well...
You do have a plan, don't you?
Of course I have a plan, you nincompoop. You are going to take the capture bots and test the island's defenses.
Me?
You! And use the freeze rays to capture as many unicorns as you can. Don't you like my plan?
Oh, yes, Mighty Hordak.
Or would you rather stay here and arm wrestle with me?
All right, last up today is episode 36, The Unicorn King, air date of Friday, October 25th, 1985. It's how we ended our week back in 1985, and how we ended October, basically. Written by Catherine M. Drennan. Yes, that should be a new name, because me and Mike, I don't think I've ever heard that one before.
I don't think I've ever heard that one before
either.
This
one's Hordak wanting to enslave unicorns, and She-Ra needs to intervene and prevent them. That's all you need for a plot synopsis. You got Hordak and Mantenna, you got She-Ra, and basically Swiftwind, and then a brief appearance from Lighthope. We also get to see some new characters named the Unicorn King and Bright Wing. So, Unicorn Island, what do you think?
It's going to set up for the end of the series. That's why they're introducing it here. And I know we don't want to spoil it and whatever else, but there is an episode later in season 2, I believe it's season 2, that's called Swifty's Baby, where they actually go back to Unicorn Island. It's the only thing I know about it.
Interesting.
But that's kind of where this is kind of set up, where it's like, you know, because Swiftwind is both, you know, spirit and a unicorn, he's both horse and unicorn. It's
The idea of this on paper sounds terrible. And I guess it goes back to what we were talking about before, as far as the goals of this series and appealing to a different audience. Maybe this is the type of stuff I was talking about. This is the type of stuff I expected. This is the, you know, the type of topics that I would consider, the types of characters I would consider that they would maybe spend more time on, and they haven't really up to this point. So I get the topic for that, but on paper, for me, it's something that I would have, if we had to like predict our ratings just based on episode titles and synopsis, like I would predict terrible ratings for this episode. I'm not
like, I wasn't even expecting what this episode was getting. Like even just looking at the title, because as we've said in this entire run of this section of Powers of Grayskull series, neither of us have really seen a lot of these episodes. Like I've seen Seahawk and Return of Seahawk like more times than I care to admit because of it showing up on broadcast television a few times in the last few years. But like a lot of these other episodes, I do not remember a lot of them. And I think that gives us a fresh perspective, obviously. I think that's interesting for us. But yeah, I mean, it's like you go over to the third annual award-winning Pixels in the Animation for the GCRN Awards. Because, yeah, Pixels destroyed us this year on the GCRN Awards.
We didn't promote our show.
Yeah, well. I didn't really promote Pixels that much either, and we didn't even have... Pixels had less episodes last year than we did.
It's a video game year, man.
It's a video game cartoon year, yeah. So, anyway, over there, because Neil and I know that most of the video game cartoons are bad, when I go to the end and I do my outro stuff like I do here all the time, and then I get to listing what the next episodes are, I will have those reactions, like what you're talking about, like, you know, having a reaction to the title of The Unicorn King, and I'll do something like, oh boy, or, you know, Luki's Adventure, I'll have some sort of reaction. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's one of those things where you wouldn't really expect this, what we got in this episode, just based on the title. I just figured, okay, it's an episode where we're going to meet some sort of king of the unicorns.
Yeah, so this is definitely one that would have to impress, because it's not the premise and it's not the plot or the title that's going to excite you on this one. So, well, we will have to wait and see if it follows through and sheds the stigma that we're putting on the title, or if it lives up to it. So we'll be right back after the break.
Where is everyone?
They must be in the woods up there.
Stay where you are.
The king!
Your Highness, are the unicorns safe?
Yes, none were harmed. Who are you?
I'm She-Ra, and this is my friend, Swift Wind.
Why have you brought this human to our island, Swift Wind?
We came to help.
Those machines belong to Hordak. He's trying to make slaves of all Aetherians, not just unicorns.
Please, believe us.
How can I believe a human and the unicorn slave of a human?
Me? I'm not a slave to anybody.
Yet a human rides on your back. Humans will never force me to carry them.
I don't force Swift Wind to do anything. Swifty helps me as a friend.
Perhaps you should meet one of my friends.
Yes, my king.
This is Brightwing. Brightwing was the last unicorn to trust a human. And see how that trust was repaid.
What happened?
Brightwing was captured by a human who used magic to keep my friend from escaping. See what that magic did to the wings? We rescued my friend, but Brightwing cannot fly.
Your Highness, we must be going.
Wait. We want to help you stop Hordak. Please.
We don't wish to fight anybody. We are peaceful beings who ask only to be left alone.
But this is your home.
Yes, and we love our island. But if the choice is leaving or being made slaves of Hordak, we will leave. Our life here is over.
All right, so for the last time today, we find ourselves in Whispering Woods. What did you like, if anything, about the Unicorn King?
George DeCenzo is the voice of the Unicorn King. Oh my god. Like, it's not like, I know the guy has done other roles in the series, and I know he's done a few small character bits in He-Man, but mainly we hear him as Hordak, and while Hordak's voice is awesome, he has that kind of slurred speech sometimes to the voice.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I just love DeCenzo's voice for the Unicorn King. It's just, it's what you expect out of a king, especially in this world. I absolutely love that. I think it's nice that we do see others like Swiftwind. We do see other unicorns, and it's introducing something that we haven't yet had in this series. I mean, you know, we've had Swiftwind, but because even though we're only halfway or two thirds or quarter of the way through this, through the first season or the first part of the series here, it's still setting up Etheria. It's still giving up. Like, we're on episode 36. If you look at, and I know everyone, most people will bitch about this reference, but if you look at Thundercats, by episode 5 or 6 of Thundercats in the first season, we had Rober Bill and the Burbles, and we had Willa and all. Like, they built up that Third Earth cast fairly fast after, you know, all that. So here they're still building the She-Ra Etherian universe, which I think adding this in is really cool.
Yeah, and I like the other aspects to it too. We have the Growling Sea, apparently. We, you know, we have actual character unicorns, so I thought it was cool seeing the other character unicorns, not just like the, you know, the generic non-speaking, you know, whatever. So I like that. Sea Fright was a new vehicle, I guess, that you see from the Horde. My only question for that was, where was Merman? Because this episode screams Merman episode.
It does, yes.
Or some type of... I can't believe they didn't create any type of water-like character for the Horde. Like, it seems like it would have been a...
Yeah, because Oppenheimer doesn't have much to do on this series, I don't think.
It just seems like it would have been an opportunity to have another new member of the Horde, but didn't get that. Trapdoors everywhere. There's just... Hordak is never far from a trapdoor, so...
I will talk about that
later. I'll talk a part of it later, but the initial trapdoor, I'm like, man, this guy has one everywhere. And I thought it was interesting, at least initially, that Hordak actually takes Mantenna with him. Usually he seems to be the type that would leave him behind, but he actually took him with him in that cool-looking, like, globe raft at first. So I was like, man, Hordak actually cares, has some compassion about one of the other Horde members. I'm not saying that last, but it was good to see at the moment. What about if we make our way over to the Fright Zone for the final time today? What didn't you like?
Well, wait a second. I do like one other thing. Hordak's plan of distraction.
Yeah?
It's not often that either Hordak or Skeletor are written or are carried out character-wise being that smart of working out a plan. Normally they just run in face first or blaster first of, oh, hey, we're just going to go destroy them. Like, but his plan of distraction of getting Mantenna to have She-Ra chase him so he can then, you know, be a... Like, I thought that was great. As far as the Fright Zone, Hordak and his trap doors. Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, like does... He reminds me of a Bugs Bunny Yosemite Sam short where they're on a ship and Bugs is firing cannons at Sam and one of the cannons ends up hitting the poop deck and ends up sinking the ship and just, oh God, Hordak, come on, man. You had a smart moment earlier with your plan and then all of a sudden just because you wanted to put Mantenna in a trap door.
my initial distaste was obviously when we were brought to the attention that we're going to go to Unicorn Island. Same as the title. I was like, are we kidding? Like, didn't we already have a unicorn story in He-Man or somewhere else? Like, I swear we saw something like that. And just, you know, the generic bland unicorns is what I thought we were going to get. So that was initially a bad reaction, even though I do appreciate that we did get some actual speaking character unicorns. The writer putting the fact that apparently Adora has a few hours off duty. Adora doesn't punch in and out. It's a rebellion.
Yeah.
You're just always on the lookout. You're always on the ready. You're not clocking in and out of some type of job. She doesn't have off time. She doesn't get a lunch break. So stop with that. Stop trying to relate it to a human world. The boomerang sword always bothers me. Always comes back. A little bit of voice work, I guess, here. And I don't usually, because I usually like Mantenna, but he reverted into Orko a little bit too much this episode. There was about two or three times where if you weren't looking at the picture, you would have thought Orko was talking. That's why he has to add that speech part, you know, to it, to his thing, so it doesn't sound like Orko. And he like let it slip like two or three times where he didn't do that enough. And I'm like, man, it sounds just like Orko.
I didn't notice that this
time. And then two things. One you already mentioned, so I won't go into it, but Hordak putting the trapdoor in a raft. That's an idiotic move. And She-Ra, did she really just go through the core of the planet? She really just drilled, her made herself into a human drill, went through the core of the planet, survived that, came back out to bypass the force field.
I don't think she did. I think what happened was she pulled a U-turn. She pulled a Yui underneath. Like,
she did become a human drill and go through the world somehow.
Yes, she did, but she didn't go so far down that she had to get to the planet's core.
No, but it still was terrible. Did not like that at all. Like, there could have been a better way of you to come out with some type of way to do that, like convince the horses to help you out, or I don't know, something. Not horses, unicorns. The PSA was about cooperation, which actually does apply to this episode. So there was cooperation in the fact of the King Unicorn and She-Ra eventually seeing eye to eye and working together. So I get that. For once. Any thoughts on the PSA?
Mm-mm.
All right. Let's take another break and we'll get back and see if there's any last minute awards that we want to give out today before we wrap up this episode.
No.
Then we'll respect your wishes and leave. But before we do, I'd like to try and help your friend.
He can't be helped.
Let me try. Please.
Well, I'll leave it to Brightwing.
I too find it hard to trust humans. But if there's any chance...
Please let me.
All right.
But I warn you, I will be watching.
I can fly. I can't fly. Oh, thank you, She-Ra. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I suppose you expect payment.
No.
Then why did you do that?
Because I hate to see anything in pain. We'll go now.
All right. Do you have anything left in your trophy case to hand out today, sir?
I didn't hand many things out today, so yeah, I'm going to give a horde back, horde bat to Hordak. Oh my god, trapdoors everywhere.
I also have a horde bat for Hordak. Not for all the other trapdoors, but for someone being an idiot to the point where you're going to put a trapdoor in a life raft and not realize that that's going to be a problem. So I echo that sentiment. I'm also going to give one to Mantenna, and I'm going to give one to Mantenna for being so weak that all it takes is She-Ra to basically say, I'm going to hurt you if you don't tell me what Hordak's plan was, and he folded instantly. So
throw
some balls, Mantenna. You got to be a little bit better of an evil warrior than that, or a horde member. You can't just divulge the plans immediately. She's at least got to hurt you some way.
So what's Hordak going to do now? Is he going to turn Mantenna into the latrine of the series, I guess?
It's going to be something, the janitor, I guess. But any protection swords?
I did, outside of the logic-defying... tornado in the ground. I did really like She-Ra in this episode for the most part. I like Swiftwind for his Obi-Wan-esque move. As soon as he became Swiftwind, he's like, it's like 1,000 voices just cried out and were silenced.
Pretty much.
I did really enjoy the Unicorn King, even though he was at first very...
I want to know what the human was. Antagonistic. I want to know which human. I want to see an episode of the story about the person that hurt Brightwing.
I think that was it Skeletor? Or I don't know. Like, I thought they were. I honestly thought they were referencing something. Because, wasn't it Hordak? Remember, wasn't there an episode recently where somebody tried to capture unicorns?
I don't know. It happened at Thundercats, too.
I can't remember. Getting all confused. I don't know.
As far as your final rating for today, where do you sit on Crystal Castles for this one?
3.5.
3.5?
Yeah.
Slightly higher than I thought you might be.
Yeah, 3.5. Like I said, I like DeCenzo's voice. I like the Unicorn King. I like the aspect of basically setting up where the unicorn half of Swiftwind / Spirit comes from, or where he'll eventually go to at some point once he retires after he cashes in his 401k plan. You know,
when he
all
has
that
to
stuff.
Stop clocking in and out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be, like, just based on the title and the plot synopsis of this one, I thought this was going to be like a one or a zero type episode. I thought it was going to be awful. It did surpass my expectations from that standpoint, but I honestly can't say that it was necessarily a great episode. I'm sitting right in the middle. I'm at a 2.5, so it's better than I thought it would be. So maybe it's still part of the expectations weighing me down, but I'm going to be a point lower than you, a 2.5.
All
right. So that does it for it. We're going to take another break and we'll be right back.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
TFG and Mike here from the Geekcast Radio Network, and today, folks, I want to talk to you about Morton's PC Repair and Service. Does your PC feel like it's a piece of dead or dying garage equipment? If you're in around the Louisville, Kentucky area and your PC needs help, call Morton's PC Repair and Service. They have the lowest prices in town, payment plans available, fast, reliable service with custom builds, virus removal, reformats, upgrades, and just about anything else your PC needs. You can reach them at 502-294-3359 or find them on Facebook. As someone who recently partook of their services, I can safely say they are the best in the PC repair business. So check out Morton's PC Repair and Service.
Well, I am shocked and dismayed.
Well, now you can't be both. You be shocked, I'll be dismayed.
Coming in 2016, Steve Megatron and myself, TF2 and Mike, bring you a brand new TV review show. Welcome to Podcaster Meets World. That's right, we're launching a Boy and Girl Meets World review podcast here on the GCRN. It'll take us 70 episodes of the podcast to review all 158 episodes of Boy Meets World. After that, we will tackle Girl Meets World. You can find Podcaster Meets World on GeekCastRadio.com and iTunes starting late summer, early fall 2016. So come on and walk through the world with us.
I love
the call. All right, folks, we are back here on Myths of Etheria, and we are
36 episodes.
Yeah, 36 out of 93, so we're getting there.
We're over halfway through season one.
Yep.
So season one obviously was the standard 65 episodes, so we've definitely passed that halfway mark here. I will say, like I said, I've done a little bit of the script work for, well, all the script work for season one, which I don't really get into too much. It's a lot of copying and pasting and and cutting stuff up and just putting information in. So it's not a lot of like in-depth look at things outside of seeing who's the writer are and then seeing a couple characters that might show up here and there and some little plot synopsis. But I will say, just based on that, I am intrigued at some stuff that's coming up still in season one. So I think there's a lot of good writers that are involved. I think there's some, we're finally going to get to see some characters that I was waiting on, as well as maybe some return of some old characters that I didn't expect. So there is some stuff to kind of keep your eye out on. So I am intrigued more than I have been in the last couple episodes, and a little bit more hopeful seeing that stuff, because the last couple episodes have basically shown me that if it's not a crossover episode, there's really not much good. There. So
yeah.
I'm hoping they can buck that trend.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Myths of Etheria. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there's several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter at geekcastradio is the network Twitter. You can follow at Pow of Grayskull for the podcast. Mine is TF2 and Mike. What is your Twitter?
At Optimus Solo.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. We hope you enjoyed the myths today, and don't forget to join us on our next adventure when we will take a look at the next three episodes, those being The Anxious Apprentice, oh no, Zoo Story, hey, it's Zootopia, and Into the Dark Dementia.
Some promise there.
Yes, really, really, really promising. for now, I am TFU and Mike with
the one and only Optimus Solo.
By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, you all have the power.